All right, once again, this is Film Study with Ken McCusick. As we look back at week six, as the Ravens lost 27-24 to the Chicago Bears to put them at 3-3. And you would think 24 points, we would have a fun offense to talk about. But like always, it seems like we don't this week. So joining us, as always, is Ken McCusick. Ken, how you doing? You ready to explain to me what I watched on Sunday?
Life's good, Josh, and I'll give it a shot.
I mean, it was we talked about the defense, and it's hard to talk about this game without talking about the offense because it was really bad. And normally when we're talking about the offense, it's that the offense doesn't hold on to the ball long enough, it's time of possession battles, it's Joe not being the smartest, it's clock management. Who do we blame? How do we start even dissecting this?
Well, it's very focused in terms of the failure, but let's take a step back from this because you mentioned something that was really important is that we talk about the defense because, hey, we do the defensive podcast on Monday. That's just the way the material, you know, is produced week by week. But the defense didn't have a great game against the Bears. They allowed 20 points on defense. I'm not counting the interception return for a touchdown, but they allowed 20 points on defense, and that's more than they should allow at home. But basically, that Bears offense was operated out of a cocoon. Trubisky never had to throw a difficult... he never took a risk with the football the entire day. He took four sacks. He threw the ball away a fair amount, but he never took a chance with that, and he was never forced to take a chance because the Ravens never had the lead, never really threatened to take it really at any point. But, until the very end.
You see, Ken, you're setting them up. You're setting up all the people who love to call into radio and say, see, if you run the ball more, you win football games. When we all know that's not how it works. It's the other way around. It's the chicken and the egg.
Yeah, we'll get to that, and we'll get to that. The special teams, we have a good mailbag question about the special teams. I don't think they could have played any better in this game. You know, if you're grading a -3 to +3 or a minus anything to a plus the same thing, you're going to end up with the special teams having the highest possible rating in this game. A return type of each type, a punt game that was unbelievable, 3 out of 3 in field goals, including a 50-yarder. You can't do any better than that, really. So it was the offense that lost this game. It was just pure and simple. It was an offensive failure that cost the game.
Right. Well, before we get to the offense, since you're in special teams, I want to talk about the end of regulation. Because my question is, obviously, we can add it to the list of wide receiver screw-ups that Wallace caught the ball, a short pass, and ran around too much, and they had no time to go up and spike the ball. Do you think they were in a situation where Justin Tucker could have hit that?
Maybe, but probably not from the original spot where Wallace caught the ball. The problem was the Ravens needed a special play ready to go at that point. So it was the first play after the possession change.
Right.
And they could have had something.
It was 12 seconds, if I remember correctly.
That's right, 12 seconds. And so it's not really possible to get a throw to the middle of the field and spike it in that time. So what do you need? You need a lateral play at that point. So you know they'll always try that if you're behind in that situation. But the idea is the lateral play would allow you to get not to the end zone, but to the sideline.
Except the Bears know that. So the Bears are going to guard those sidelines tight. That's why the middle is open.
It's very hard to maintain that. Once the pass goes to the middle, the defenders converge, and it's very possible to get a lateral to the sideline. So I would say, yes, there is always a risk of that, and there is some risk that the ball be fumbled and run back for a touchdown. We know that. But there's also a good chance you get to the sideline, Tucker gets to make the kick, and you have a chance at the end of regulation. But that was the only way. I didn't really see a good opportunity for a sideline route there.
So it didn't bother you that Wallace ran around?
No, it didn't.
Because if he went down, it looked like they would have had enough time to spike the ball.
They might have had like 2 or 3 additional seconds, right, and it might have been enough time to spike
the ball. As time ran out, it was right when the ref was getting there, so you think they would have – it might have worked out. It was close.
So maybe Tucker would have had a chance from 60 yards that way. Other way, maybe
– right. But he struggled at anything over 50 so far this year.
He has missed some over 50. Did he kick a 59-yarder in the preseason, or was that in the regular season? I'm trying to remember. But
I think that was the preseason. I don't think he's had any real deep balls in the regular season.
Okay, I'm trying to remember now, and I'm kind of getting fuzzy, so that's good. Anyway, obviously a very difficult offensive performance, so I guess we should just start to going through that.
Yeah. Let's we're gonna put the blame for this loss on the offense.
Yeah.
So let's start with the offense, and how much did the game really come down to the offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's worth quantifying. So you look at the three biggest plays for the Ravens, and I know Campanaro dropped the first down. I'm not including this one in there, but they had a pass to Max Williams, which was fumbled at the Chicago 20. That was the first of the many bad plays. Max Williams left hurt after that, but because that play would have put the ball at the 20 with a first down, that's either a 4 or maybe a 5-point difference in scoring right there. So that was one problem. The second problem, the interception that went through Perriman's hands. No excuse for the ball not being caught. Gets popped up, turned around. The Ravens would have had the ball at the 30. Instead, that switched to the Bears at the Ravens' 20. It actually made about a 10 or 11-point difference, or maybe even a 12. But it in expected points, it was about a 9-point turnaround. But the Bears immediately scored a touchdown there. You couldn't assume that would have happened, but that's what actually, in fact, did happen. So 9-point expected turnaround there. Now, the third play was the interception off Young. Now, that wasn't entirely Young's fault. Fuller was there. He made a play on the ball. It was a reasonable chance to have a PD, but it was also a reasonable chance to have a catch. And the Ravens would have been at the 10-yard line in really nice shape to take the lead. And instead, ball pops loose, gets returned 90 yards for the touchdown.
Is that the ball off Chris Moore?
Yeah. So I'm sorry, Chris Moore. Did I say Young?
Yeah, you said Young.
Do that a lot.
Yeah, I was gonna say I missed. I know I learned a lot of new wide receivers this week. I didn't remember a Young.
I didn't hear we acquired him, huh? All right.
See that iTunes people. I also sometimes get things right.
Oh please, guys, put that in the review. How much you like Josh? Right. He's great.
All right, so the ball off Chris Moore that was returned.
So ball off Chris Moore, about an 11-point turnaround on that one. Maybe 11. If you call that 11 points, it's maybe 24 points in total or cost the Ravens on those three plays. So it's often possible to find one play in a close game that would have turned the game around in a 27-24 game. And you don't have any problem if there was only one play, but when it's three plays that cost you 20 points,
and
that's not even, and
you're not even counting the Chris Matthews when he was wide open in the end zone and tripped over his own feet.
I'm not counting that. I'm not counting Flacco running past the line of scrimmage and throwing the ball in the end zone. I'm not counting the drop by Campanaro. I'm not counting the general ineptitude on third down. I'm not counting any of that. I'm just counting these three big plays.
I know, but I mean, yeah, you're talking three big plays by three different wide receivers. And when really you look at this and you can blame all six wide receivers did something wrong on Sunday that cost points almost.
Yeah, I mean, there wasn't anybody who really had a good day among the receivers. I mean, Ben Watson caught 6 balls on 8 targets. That's not terrible, but it was for 28 yards. He's averaging 4.7 yards per reception.
Well, that's the tight end check down move.
It is. It's a lot of that, and that got old really quickly. Wallace, who'd averaged 44.3 yards and made all three catches last week, was 3 of 5 for 30 yards this week. Not exciting. Campanaro, we saw a little bit from Campanaro, but he caught 3 of 5 balls for 24 in the end. That's not exciting. You know, running backs are not catching the ball for any distance. I mean, Chris Moore is the only guy who had a decent average yards per catch, and he only caught 3 of the 7 balls thrown to him and had this interception. So
all right.
It was a bad day for the receivers.
So we've got 6 wide receivers with Wallace, Perriman, Matthews, Moore,
Campanaro.
And Williams
is a tight end.
All right, well, he's a tight end. My question is, how many of these guys are, like, average NFL wide receivers?
Do we
have a really poor class outside of Wallace?
Yeah, Wallace is an average NFL wide receiver, probably an average number 2 NFL wide receiver right now, maybe a little bit better than that.
Okay.
You've got, otherwise, no.
All right, and then... the other wide receiver. We do have another legit wide receiver who was on IR.
Macklin sat out the game, yeah.
Right, so he sat out, not IR, but just sat out on Sunday. So that hurt before the game even started.
Right, and it was a very costly loss. Now, fortunately, Macklin's back at practice today, but there's a whole bunch of other people who are not at practice today, and rumor has it that there may be some flu going around at the Ravens facility, so hopefully that's all it is.
I like flus because flu doesn't put you out for the year.
Yeah, that's the way to think about it. Certainly the way I think about it. But Stanley was not practicing today, and a whole bunch of other people. Jimmy Smith was not practicing again. Frankly, if Jimmy Smith takes a veteran day off every practice the remainder of the year, but is still able to go on Sunday, I think the Ravens would be fairly lucky.
Yeah, I agree. I hope that's the case, and I really hope this is the flu, because we're talking on Wednesday evening. That means that with some fluids and that Z-Pack thing that all the athletes get, they'll be perfectly fine by Sunday.
I hope so. I hope so. I mean, they're going to Minnesota. There might be some added flu risk there. Who knows? But whatever. We'll hope for the best, and hope they all can play Sunday.
Right. Right. All right. We dealt with the wide receivers. We talked a little bit about the tight ends. Let's go with the offensive line, because that's been a struggle this year. Is given Joe time.
Yeah, I mean, it has been a struggle, but honestly, as we work through, it's the least broken thing about the offense right now. I mean, in fact, they've been okay as an offensive line. This wasn't their best game. You know, they had some good and some bad play, but nobody was completely off the charts like it's been in the past. I mean, we haven't had a Gradkowski or a Cousins performance out there to just wipe this team off the map somewhere. It's been guys who are struggling against some pretty good pass rushers this week, and we'll go through and we'll talk about each of those as
but,
we go.
But see, I look at it, and I look at, well, the offensive line is the part that's broken on our offense, because that's where we've had the injuries hurt. Where the other guys, they're just not good players. or the setup isn't. It's not like something's broke in that situation, where we really do have injuries that we've had to overcome in the offensive line.
Yeah, obviously, it's been the most injured positional group, but they're also probably the best coached positional group. I mean, maybe the defensive line is better, maybe the secondary is better, but the offensive line is well coached. They've got Greg Roman's been good, and he's got a good scheme that the players seem to have bought into, and Dallas Sanders, who's the guy who does the individual unit coaching drills, seems to connect with the players and be pretty effective, specific, and technical. I really enjoy watching those guys practice as a group in camp. It was always something I wanted to do, was watch the offensive linemen practice their drills.
Okay. All right, let's go through them. Let's start. I think we always start with Stanley, so let's start with Stanley.
That's the way. So we go from left tackle over to the right. So one thing you missed on this Fox broadcast, unfortunately, there's been a lot of crazy suggestions, but Fox is the NFC network, of course, right. But when the NFC team plays in Baltimore, then the game goes to Fox, and that's what happened, of course, this weekend.
Right. We're just not used to it, so we think it looks like a horrible broadcast.
It looks different to us. I mean, there's something about the color of it looks better to me. We could talk about that a little bit later when we talk about
That's the refresh rate is what it's called. It's getting you those better greens.
We're gonna tap into that.
Right.
I will really appreciate that. But Stanley lined up standing in the slot on one play, and there's been a lot of questions about how the Ravens aren't putting any razzle dazzle into their offense. Everything's plain vanilla, blah blah blah. But anyway, Stanley lined up in what effectively is a New England formation. Now, what had happened was he was lined up, well, probably 5 or 6 yards removed from the tight end position and standing on the left side, while a receiver outside him was also at the line of scrimmage. Now, what that means is only the outside guy on each side is eligible. You can otherwise arrange your linemen however you like, including you could snap the ball from the leftmost or rightmost lineman if you wanted to. In this case, they snapped it from the third, the second to the right in this case. They still had Illuminor to the right of Jensen, but then to the right of him was Watson lined up at a right tackle position. And that's a formation that New England has used against the Ravens with some success and in other games as well. And it looked like maybe they'd run a pass play to get Watson free in the seam, you know, get him uncovered as a right tackle kind of thing is the idea. But they didn't. They just ran a fairly simple stretch play to the left. Stanley crashed back into the line and had a good seal block, and then all of a sudden it became an individual play because Collins took it to the outside, gained 6 yards on the play. But anyway, it was upsetting to me that Fox misses the broadcast, and then I have to wait for the All-22 to come out to actually see what happened on that play. And that delays, you know, how I can score the game and whatnot. But I like the creativity. I hate the fact that Fox missed the play.
Right. And I'm sure Fox isn't happy with it either whenever they miss anything.
Yeah.
But
yeah. So Stanley himself, though, I didn't really talk about him.
You talked more about this broadcast, one play.
Yeah. Yes. So anyway, Stanley overall had a good game. He had Pernell McPhee as his assignment for most of the game. And I will tell you, the Ravens fans ought to be very upset that Pernell McPhee ever left the Ravens, because after 3 years gone, he is still one hell of a pass rusher. And he gave Stanley troubles in this game. 3.5 pressures all had something to do with McPhee. And McPhee also had pressures on the right side as well. And he did have a sack in the game as well. So that was a cleanup sack, but still, sack's a sack. And he looked very good. But Stanley did a good job. He didn't miss many blocks. He missed, four missed blocks and 3.5 pressures in the game. A nice long 70-snap game, and works out to be a B-plus for him. So he was the best of the Ravens linemen this week with that grade.
Okay, not bad. Let's move on to James Hurst.
Okay, so James Hurst had a holding penalty in the game, which was his one serious error. But in 70 plays, he only had one pressure, and that's actually two half pressures he had in the game. And otherwise, he played well, got a C-plus in the game. And he's made three of his four pulls this week. We talk a little bit about that because Hurst in the first 4 weeks had not been very good at pulling, and they were asking him to do it an awful lot. He made 13.5 out of 27 points on pulling. But in the last two games, he's gone 14 for 16. So obviously a big, big improvement, and if that's meaningful with Illuminor on the right side, it could really help the Ravens' run game. So it's something exciting to keep an eye on for Hurst that's positive.
Okay, that's good. Jensen's been fun to watch this year, and helps with the fact that Yanda's gone. Just that Jensen's fun, and he's just a beast right there in the middle. But he didn't have his best game.
No, I took a step backward. He had some pressure issues. He had 7 missed blocks in the game, and unfortunately, in this game, a fair number of his missed blocks, and I don't have the number right on me, I'm not looking at it, were missed blocks where he was beaten on the play. So if you go to the article, it talks a little bit about that. 6 blocks in level 2, 1 pancake, and I know I had this in here. There you go. 6 of his 7 blocks, he was in the process of getting beaten. Now, that didn't cost him points in this game, but what I'd say is if you miss 6 out of 7 blocks, you're typically going to have some negative scores built in there that would have hurt his grade a lot more. So the game was probably worse than the grade indicated in this case, but he got a D in this game for his play, still allowed 1.75 pressure, half a sack that he shared with Illuminor in the game. Didn't have as many nasty, pancakey, level 2, make the defense upset at him blocks as well. So he'll be back, but this was a tough week for Ryan.
All right. Skura was out, so it gave Illuminor the chance to start, which is fun to see a young guy start, but how'd he do?
Yeah, always fun to see a first start. And Illuminor, obviously, it had been having some troubles, and we've been talking about that the last few weeks in fairly limited playing time, but his first start was much better than expected. He graded out as a B, and I know he did not meet an eye test that would give that level, but what I'll say is he's got a lot of the same things happening to him that happened to Jensen in the game. He had 7 missed blocks also, and on 4 of those, he was in the process of getting beat. So it's another game where Illuminor, if he had that game again, probably wouldn't grade out as well. But then I look at it and I say, well, it's still a B. Maybe it would have dropped to a C- or maybe even a high D, and I still say it's probably better than Ravens fans have the right to expect. So a pretty good first start. I'm happy with it. I'd love to see him get a C every week the rest of the year and be able to really maintain that level. He certainly has the big physical nature the Ravens would like to have if they want to emphasize the running game for the rest of the year.
Outside of the flu, do we really know how health is looking, or if we're looking at Illuminor starting again this coming week?
Skura is not nearly ready to be back. I think Skura might be out. They say 2 to 4 weeks. That always seems to get extended. I would expect we'll see him after the bye.
Okay.
Honestly.
All right. Austin Howard has 2 first names, but how'd he play on Sunday?
Yeah, I can make things difficult, but he had a very difficult day against Leonard Floyd. Now, we talked a little bit jokingly last week, and maybe even we could work out someday to have Howard on the show, but we wouldn't have him on after a game like this. We'll wait for a good game to have him on have him teach us some stuff about offensive line play. Leonard Floyd was his opponent. Leonard Floyd, great young pass rusher for the Bears. And to Howard's credit, he did not allow a sack to him, right? He didn't charge him with a sack anyway. But he did allow 8.25 pressures in the game. That broke down as 7 fulls, 2 halves, and 1 quarter. So that's 10 events there. And he also allowed another 1/3 of a sack. And that was a case of he was driven back directly into Flacco's face. It happened right at the end of the 3-second ATS period. So all I did was call it a pressure, blame the rest on Joe for not getting the ball out, and then McPhee got a cleanup sack. Now, this was true across the line, but it's most true of Howard, is that they did a really good job of keeping the Bears off of Flacco for the most part. Like even Howard, he gave up ground in the pocket and let them get close and invade the ATS space, but he didn't allow a sack, and he didn't, in fact, allow Joe to be hit. So that was a positive thing. And the line allowed 3 sacks in total, or there were 3 sacks in total, but there were no other quarterback hits in the game. So reducing the number of hits on Flacco is always going to be a good thing. And while it wasn't a great game from Howard, and he obviously had a difficult time against a very high-end pass rusher, I'm not too concerned about it in terms of the future.
Okay. Well, that's an average game from our offensive line. And I haven't heard you talk much about Joe yet. So I want to get to Joe, but I want to do it by let's go to the mailbag. And let's start with the first question about Joe. The first one, we should start the mailbag with just this comment from John Obricki, I'm going to go with, who goes for the easy joke with the, oh, cool, I didn't know we had an offense to ask questions about. I'll look around for it. And, the offense has been rough this season. And that's why we got to start with Joe. And Minion Hunter asks, we saw Joe step into throws, but not to the left side over the middle. Is this a good or bad sign?
Okay, so I think what he's saying is that Joe likes to throw to the right more than the left. The initial deep ball to Wallace in the previous game at Oakland was a deep ball right down the left sideline. I don't consider it a pattern yet, but I'm going to say this, that we have not really seen the good mid-range passing game from Joe, and that involves a lot of velocity. So one of the things we can do with timing plays is to look at velocity of the football, and I need to look at some of those on the throws that really require velocity. And I think we talked about this last week, but those are the throws over the middle of the field. Generally, if you're throwing to a running back, you're dumping it off, you intentionally underthrow the ball. If you're throwing a ball with a lot of air under it down the sidelines, not a high velocity ball in terms of the average over its entire distance. It's more of a timing throw. But the throws over the middle of the field that need to separate defenders, those need to be thrown with high velocity. And what we heard from Ravens receivers in the past is that Joe will remorselessly break their fingers with the velocity of his passes. And I don't think we've really seen that yet from Joe this year. Hope we do.
Yeah, if a wide receiver gets a broken finger and has to go out of the game because he caught a ball that was too hard, that's a good thing. Joe hasn't been elite Joe since the Super Bowl. Is it time to be concerned about Joe yet?
Well, is it time? It's always time to be concerned if your franchise quarterback is underperforming, and he has underperformed since the Super Bowl. Terrible year in 13. Came back, had a good year in 14, another good playoff year as well. But then 15, he was hurt, and 16, he wasn't good coming back from the injury. And 17 so far, he hasn't looked good either. So it has been a while. It definitely is time for the Ravens to try and plan on how they're going to draft their next franchise quarterback, whether they want to try a prospect route and get a second or third or fourth round guy that can grow into the role and they get lucky on, or whether they really want to go after a first round guy at some point. So they need to have a plan in place, a succession plan for Joe, but I'm hoping it's not quite time, and the salary cap would tell you it can't really be time.
So then are you giving Joe a little bit of grace because of the wide receivers he has to work with?
It's not because of that. It's just because of the situation itself. The salary cap doesn't allow you to easily cut Flacco without gutting the team entirely. Okay. So if you do it, you're going to do something in terms of a complete rebuild. Then you can take on a lot of dead money in your cap in 1 year, accept a bad year. Maybe your fans even forgive you for it because fans love draft picks much more than the front office does in a lot of cases.
Sure,
fans
but
love draft picks.
If you're doing that, you're not just losing Joe, you're losing Harbaugh as well.
Yeah, you'd be changing your coaching regime, and you'd be giving up on a couple of big contracts that you're not happy with. So they'd have to decide that somebody else wasn't worth the money also at the same time as Joe, and they'd be right. There's a cap purge in 02. They had to let a lot of players go. They still kept the important core players, drafted Ed Reed that year, kept Ray Lewis, and moved on.
How many years does Terrell Suggs have left? Might be the year after that's the time we close up shop.
Right. And it's a good point. And I don't know how many on the contract. I'd have to look at that.
Right.
But he was a cheap keep this year. Next year, he's a more expensive keep.
Okay. All right. At Dustin Cox asks, why has Breshad Perriman been so non-existent? Does it come down to his inability to get open through his route running?
You know, it's a good point. One of the things that you see with Perriman is that he's not a super physical receiver. He has his top-end speed, but top-end speed guys can often be beaten with press. And if they can't work their way through the press or work their way through the first contact with the defensive back, then they're a lot yet less useful. And, you know, Torrey Smith wasn't a big physical guy, but he had the ability to get through that contact. And he had the ability, once he got past the guy, to draw more contact that would lead to pass interference penalties. We just have not seen the same thing from Perriman. And they need to figure out schematically how they can get him on get the ball in his hands with some space in front of him, because he is incredibly dangerous if you do that.
And I think he's got to catch the ball so that Joe starts trusting him in tighter situations.
You know, very good point as well. Without trust, he's going to get less opportunities, so it won't even really matter. If he's able to break free of some of these cornerbacks' press moves or cornerbacks' hand games they play with him on the sideline.
Right, and we got a theme going here as Shane Oren says, knowing the Ravens have no passing game, can the offense play heavy rushing the same way the Bears played?
Well, there's a limit. I mean, first of all, the Bears didn't win the game by rushing the ball. They got the game over with by rushing the ball, but they won the game because of the three plays we just mentioned on
right.
the damn offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, the defensive.
Two interceptions
the
and a fumble. And they won the game with the two pass plays that beat Jefferson, and they won the game with the missed tackle by Weddle, which is a run game play, of course. But in general, I mean, they didn't win the game at the run. Despite all the rushing yards they piled up in that game, they really did not win the game with the run. It was bad, but that the Ravens would give that much up and a little bit foreign to us, but it wasn't the reason they won the game. So can the Ravens do it? I think the Ravens can rely heavily on the run to get games over with, but I think there is no escape from making plays in the passing game in the National Football League. You have to do that. So they have to figure out what about this passing offense can work pretty damn quickly and schematically change what they need to do to fix it. And if it means sitting down Perriman and having Macklin and, you know, bringing Quincy Adeboy Joe back to be a key part of the receiving team, then that's a possibility. But whatever the case may be, they need to decide if they can fix the passing game right now. This is still a team that could make the playoffs. It's not out of the realm of possibility. We need to make sure we don't get too high or too low from week to week. This was a bad loss, but Oakland was a great win. They go to Minnesota. If they can cobble together a win somehow there, they're still in really good shape to make the playoffs. And we'll see if they can put the team together. They got some guys returning now. We've got Brandon Williams looking like he might play Sunday. And that should help them a lot defensively. So, they might be starting to put the pieces back together.
It is, yes, it is nice to have a soft part of the schedule. And 4-3 will look a lot better. It's just, how are they going to look in the field, if they're going to look like they can make a playoff push on the field or not?
That's right. And you know, some people would say, why bother making the playoffs with this team? Because they're not, they're not going to go anywhere in the playoffs. I say it's always worth being in the playoffs.
Right, right. We've heard that before. You just got to get in. And you got to get hot at the right time, and who knows. You never know. The Packers just lost Aaron Rodgers, and now that whole division's completely different.
Yep.
You never know in the NFL. I'm going to tap on one more question here for the mailbag from at Josh Soroka. Guy's
okay.
Really smart, and he wants to ask about Alex Collins, because we haven't talked about Alex Collins. He seemed to come out of the doghouse once again, and What do we take away from this rushing game? Do you like what you're seeing so far? Is there any positive?
I really like Collins. I mean, Collins has been terrific in terms of yards per carry. He's just exciting every time he gets the ball in his hands, and he looks like he can run for 10 yards or 30.
Well, he does. He runs 30 yards left and right and then gets to the 10.
Yeah, he is. You know, in that respect, he kind of reminds me of Le'Veon Bell some in terms of he's kind of patient, looks for a hole, and then cuts into it incredibly quickly and makes a move. I mean, he's not obviously Le'Veon Bell yet, but he's a good – he's looks like he was a really good acquisition, and the Ravens should be thrilled to have him. I mean, you know, when all the other running backs have problems, whether it's injuries or inability to pass block, you're really happy to have a guy like Collins. We did want to hit on one more thing on the show, and I wanted to point this out. I'm glad we've got time for it now, because, hey, we don't have sponsors, and we don't actually have time limit.
I forgot about the Fox broadcast.
So
I forgot about that mention.
We got a neat little thing. We got the one thing we're going to talk about is the ability to time plays on the field. Now, this is something that comes up every once in a while. You can use it for hang time on punts, for timing out things in the passing game to see how things are going. One thing I've thought about is trying to record pass velocity on some of these throws in the middle, because it's a fairly simple geometric problem to find out how many yards did the ball travel in the air. And then it's a timing thing that you can get down to 0.03 seconds in a CBS game, as we'll talk about, less than that in a Fox game.
All right, so this is StatCast at home.
StatCast at home. So do your amateur StatCast is... You really take the StatCast wizardry out of it because it's not very hard. But we're just going to talk about the timing component right now, because you can use that for a lot of other things. And by the way, that's one of the fun things of being an analyst. Just make up something you want to time in football. Start timing it. Make some observations. Maybe draw a conclusion or move on to the next thing, one or the other. But that's the fun thing about being an analyst. Just do it. Just start. So anyway.
I time the commercial breaks. They're way too long.
Okay. So how do you time something to 0.03 second accuracy? If you have a DirecTV remote, if you hit pause in the action, you then have the ability to use the fast forward button to go forward one, I'll call it, and I'm putting air quotes on this, frame at a time. I don't know if that means one refresh. Maybe you can tell me, Josh, what that is.
I think you're moving 1 second at a time when you do it that way.
No.
Or it's less than a second?
Oh, it's 1/30th or 1/60th, and that was what I was going to get to. So
okay, you're going a frame, so it's probably a 30th.
Okay, so it's a 30th is the refresh on the, or is the amount of time that I move forward, because I know if I click forward 30 times, it's 1 second, and I timed it out using the game clock. So we used that to time various things in the past.
Right. So different TV equipment has different refresh rates, and I guess the DirecTV boxes are a 30 frame per second for the standard boxes. It's what if you go to the big box stores and buy a big TV. They all have, and now they say, it used to be they were 60 hertz, and then they were 120 hertz. Now they all say 240 hertz, and that is the refresh rate of that TV.
Of 240 course, hertz means 240 per second, or what does it mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Of course, no one broadcasts at that. You're broadcasting cameras are 30 frames a second. If you go to the movie theater, until recently, the standard movie frame was 25 frames a second.
Right.
So that's why... For some reason the 25 frames a second kind of pulled more emotion into a scene. The more frames is, think of it like 25 still pictures and all ran together like a flip book.
Yeah.
So the 30 frames, I guess CBS uses 30 frames because 30 frames is a standard. It's been a standard for a long time for television.
Mm-hmm.
Now with the better cameras, they can get faster refresh rates. So you're seeing Fox has nicer cameras for right now, so they are shooting things at 60 frames per second. Truth is, everyone's probably, the cameras are probably shooting at even higher frame rates, but the back end and the truck and whatever broadcast equipment is set to either 60 or 30, depending on which company.
Okay, so that's great explanation. And Josh, by the way, has a background in this, so he's just not talking out of his rear end here. This is good stuff. But is it anything having to do with the 720p versus 1080i? Does that have anything to do with it? Because I've heard that
again, that's the back end and how they are designed. So yes, it's got a little bit to do with how they set up. When they set up with the 720p, that's a more you see every frame, where the 1080i is the eyes for interlaced, so they overlap a little bit. So that's why you're down to the 30.
Okay. All right. And one thing I notice on the Fox broadcast, which I don't know to what to attribute this is, but I see a much deeper, darker color. Like the purple on the uniforms looks much better on the Fox broadcast.
Yeah, it's because there's more processing power because you're getting that extra frame per whatever that because you're getting double the amount of frames. Everything is just sharper and clearer to your eyes.
Okay.
It's like the new 4K televisions. And the new and HDR is the big thing. It's just the more information that a camera can collect and that the computers can all process and feed you, the more it makes your brain feel like it's more and more like a picture window.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. So in my work, I use the timing of each individual play to do things like ample time and space and make those judgments. So we had one that was closest last week, and there's always a couple that are close per week. And hang time is a good one, you know, time on pass plays. But anyway, I would encourage anyone who has this capability, just try it out. And you'll probably become addicted to using it in some way and try and find out something about the game you want to time, whether it's how the defensive linemen are getting off more quickly, one than others. You can really see that in individual frame advances, or which offensive linemen are getting out of their stance quicker and getting into a blocking stance. Michael Orr was good at that because I think he had some timing mechanism with the center when he was here. But anyway, that was just an interesting thing to see that Fox had a different rate and that was 60 clicks to move ahead on that.
And that's why when we're watching at home, it looks weird to us. And we're not quite sure what it is, and it's just our brain processing the different refresh rates and resolutions of the two channels.
Okay. All right. I appreciate your expertise on that, Josh.
Yeah. We're moving into a world where everything is going to be better and brighter, and that's all the 4K and Ultra HD stuff that you see now. And when that comes to sports... I've seen a little bit, and if you watch a football game in Ultra HD 4K, it is unbelievable. And it is, as much as we like HD and can say now that it is better than going to the stadium sometimes, it is unreal what we will have in the next 5 years.
So the boards are 4K at the stadium, and they do look terrific. Have you seen a 4K broadcast of a football game?
Yes. Yeah,
okay.
Some college game. I don't remember what game. It was a few years ago. Yeah, because I work in this field of residential home electronics, and I work in the really high-end end of it where I'm putting in all these super ridiculous systems and designing them, I go to these trade shows where I just see some unbelievable stuff of what's coming in a few years. So
I treated myself to a 38-inch curved screen monitor recently, and the thing is unbelievable. But mostly, it's for gaming right now. I'm trying to figure out when the NFL is going to give us that 4K video to really devour. So
I don't know. I've been begging for it in Major League Baseball, and it's only the Toronto Blue Jays who are doing it. And it's a process of getting the because it starts with the cameras, and then it goes to the broadcast trucks. And then it's to Verizon DirecTV. I guess it's to Masson to deal with or CBS to deal with. And then every stage. Like we think, well, we can just upgrade our TVs at home. But really it's every step to get it to you has to also be upgraded. And that is being fast-tracked right now by all the broadcast companies that there will even be broadcasting. The goal is this summer, the 2018 Olympics, to be broadcast on, I think it's NBC owns the rights, to be broadcast over the air in 4K, Ultra HD. That doesn't mean DirecTV and Verizon will have it in 4K yet, but
if
you put up a pair of rabbit ears, you'll get a beautiful picture.
Oh, that actually sounds like something worth trying.
Yeah, if you want to have fun and you want a picture that you want to do an interesting experiment and you live near a big city like Baltimore or D.C., hook up an antenna onto your TV and in your HD TV and then look at CBS or Fox. The quality is always better by antenna than Verizon, Comcast, or DirecTV.
Did not know that.
Yeah, it's uncompressed.
Okay.
So, see, you know all the football nerdy stuff. I know this stuff. I'm not sure which one's more valuable, but...
No, well, you're actually making money at yours, I can tell you. I'm not making any money at this, so life is good.
Right. So, all right, let's bring it back to football to close out. Again, I'm not going to point you to all the websites you can go to read all that tech nerdy stuff. I want people to go to Russell Street Report and read the film study breakdown where you go into a whole lot more detail.
Yeah, appreciate that, Joshua. Also, follow me on at Film Study Ravens online if you want to send in your questions for the mailbag, defense or offense next week. Tag it with pound Film Study mailbag, and you'll get me that way.
Yeah, we'll hashtag get on though. Hashtag. You got to go. You got to go with the hashtag for the young
again.
People.
I did again.
I mean, if you're Ken's age, pound sign Film yes. Study Ravens.
Yes.
Or Film Study mailbag.
Let's say they wanted to hear a little bit about the misery of the Orioles. Where would they go for that, Josh?
They should go to Section 336 and check out our podcast. We had this week's episode is a lot of fun. We talked playoff baseball because we all miss playoff baseball. We miss it because we love watching it. But what we all really miss is playoff baseball in Baltimore and experiencing that and the emotion that goes into it. And there were some big plays in the playoffs this past week. And last week there was a play at first base where a guy slid and his foot popped off the bag, and so he got tagged out. So mm-hmm. Matt, my brother, who I do the podcast with, and I got in a big argument on this week about how if baseball needs to change and adjust some of their rules for something like that, where the guy made it to the base, but because of physics, his leg bounced off.
Did he overslide the bag and then he wasn't?
No, he didn't. It wasn't like a second base overslide. It was It was because of his foot hit the top of the bag and just bounced off. Like if you, like if you take your hand and pound it on like a bed or a mattress and it's gonna bounce up a little bit.
That's interesting because you're allowed to overrun the bag, certainly into foul territory anyway.
First base. You can't. Only the first base. And
this was a different base.
This was a different play. It wasn't running from home plate.
Okay.
So it was sliding back to first base.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
So interesting play because the Orioles are excellent at it. If you watch Jonathan Scope, he tags the guy sliding into the second. He does not remove that glove until it's clear the guy isn't moving.
Mm.
And it hurt this game, and he got caught out because his foot bounced up while he was being tagged, and I think that's how baseball works, and that's the rules. Matt thinks it's time to change that rule. So we had a pretty passionate argument about it. So
it's a really hard argument to get passionate about, I would think, but I respect it.
You know what? If you listen to Section 336, you'll learn that there's very little things we cannot get passionate about when you put two brothers and a brother-in-law together.
Very good. So. It's a good show. It's a lot of fun to listen to. They've had me on as a guest a few times. I really appreciate it. Anytime you guys want during the off season, we'll do that.
Yeah,
again,
we
Josh.
Will definitely be doing that soon. But this Sunday we've got the Vikings and we go to Minnesota and it's a 1 o'clock game, which I didn't know. I thought it was be a 4 o'clock, but 1 o'clock, so a nice early game, even though it's out of our time zone.
That's right. So we're going and we'll be excited to be there too. It's noon there, so.
Okay. Are you going out to Minnesota?
We are.
Okay. Well, have a good trip. I hope it goes better than your trip to London.
Yes.
And we will talk on Monday.
Okay. Thanks, Josh.